It's time to talk about the outdoors in South Alabama. Hunting, fishing, and getting outside along the Great Gulf Coast. It's time to take it outside with FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. With reports, stories, how-to information, and Dr. Bill's Marine Forecast. Here's Sean Sullivan and Mike Ward.
And away we go, FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Glad to have y'all along. We'll talk about Snapper today. You've found the right show. Although you had a nice mixed bag,
Mike. We did. We had a good trip Sunday. Sure did. We caught a mess of fish.
Okay.
A box of fish.
Okay, so here's the thing. Here's the two sides of that story. Mike goes and catches a box of fish. I go and didn't have to clean fish when I got back.
Well, that's not a good story.
It's not a good story, but I'm just comparing contrast on that. And
you know, I'm surprised you were in 140 foot of water, mm-hmm. and I'm surprised that you didn't catch some beeliners.
I was on a spot that is a beeliner spot. And I didn't
catch any beeliners.
No beeliners.
We haven't talked. I mean, we haven't talked. Since
this is the fun thing. We come in here. Y'all basically get to hear Mike and I just catch up from last week.
Right.
Yeah. And no, I did not. I did not catch any beeliners. Yeah. I was in beeliner depth, but did not catch them. Probably because you couldn't get through the 13 to 14 inch snapper to catch the beeliners.
Well, one of the problems. What kind of bait was you using?
Squid. And squid, we can get in this discussion. Let's go ahead and tell you what. Let's bring on our guest, too, because I want to hear, because not only his professional and scientific opinion, he's a fisherman. So Dr. Sean Powers, the Angela and Stephen Stokes Endowed Professor in Environmental Resiliency and Director of the Stokes School of Marine Science at the University of South Alabama, and Senior Marine Scientist at Dolphin Island Sea Lab, Dr. Sean Powers. Hey, man.
Hey, man.
Okay.
I thought you brought me on to rule who is the better fisherman, because it's pretty...
Yeah, Mike's going to win that one from this yeah. week. Okay, but because before we get into that, you said what I had for bait. So I had a chance to pick up some squid on Saturday.
Yeah.
Okay, we were somewhere there near a bait shop down on the parkway.
Right.
Okay, and went and got it out of the freezer back there. When I got it, it already seemed a little suspect. You know, there's squid, and then there's good squid.
Right.
And it went, so then I got it back and got it, you know, refrozen that night, you know, and then took it out. It was squid so bad that, like, even as it's melting in the fish box back there and you're riding, you're like, what's that smell? You know what I'm talking about? The squid.
Yeah.
So it did not have the best squid. But, yes, I was fishing squid, had nothing else, stopped one spot to get live bait. That didn't work out. So I just said, to heck with it, let's just go. And, you know, sometimes you go, hey, we're just going to go out and catch our, because it's just two of us, we're going to go catch four snapper and be done with it. I don't need to bother with getting all the live bait and doing all
right.
that. Well, that'll be part of our conversation today.
Yeah. Well, I always try to get bait.
You know,
I went and got some pogies the 2 days before I went, mm-hmm. some fresh pogies, and then had some really good squid.
Mm-hmm.
But then I also went and caught live bait. I always want live bait when I'm
I always
out,
want it, too.
Because live bait is going to catch you bigger fish 99% of the time.
I want a ranch in Wyoming, too, but I don't have it.
Yeah.
You could have worked on it. You could have spent
another hour
and went
and caught some bait.
Yes.
And
yes, sir.
You didn't need 100. All you need was 15, 20 baits.
You're right.
And your trip might have turned out.
And you know I know better. You know I know better.
Yes.
But what I'm doing is just being honest with you.
Yeah.
That it wasn't working out right there on that ship, so we said, the heck with it, let's just go catch fish.
Yeah.
Well, and guess what happens?
But you got to have good bait.
So
catch big fish, good fish, got to have good bait.
Okay, but let's stick with the squid part of it for a second.
Okay.
So well, we got Dr. Powers.
Also say right. you caught a lot of fish.
Caught 40, I think, quick counting around 40 snapper. But I want to ask you this, from all the research, and we're going to get it, when you use squid, is there any research done on, you put the ROV down and put some Bobo bunk squid like I ended up getting from this bait shop on this given day and some better stuff down and seeing if there's a preference?
No.
Okay.
I don't know how much demand we would have for such a study.
I want that study because I felt like I knew better when I got that. It was just when it was already – I mean, they'll still eat it. But
yeah, they will.
But it's just
– no doubt. They'll eat stinking squid.
Yes, and it was stinking. I think I could probably still smell it in my memory.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it was a – well, it was beautiful days out there. Y'all did have a looking at your pictures. You had a pretty good box. I saw some dolphin as well.
We did. Caught a pile of fish. Caught a limited snapper. It was eight of us, so we caught 16 snapper, and we caught a limited beeliners, which is 80.
Mm-hmm.
So we caught 80 beeliners and 35, 40 dolphin, And finally, I just had
to tell them. It was 35 or 40, really.
Yeah. And finally, I just had to tell them, stop. Don't put another one in the boat. Put the rental rods up.
Right.
We had enough.
Were they, you know, I was looking at some of the pictures. Were they, you know, we often joke, and I'll get Dr. Power's opinion on this, too. You've got, we know we got chicken dolphin, and you know you have bull dolphin, right? Those the way we use these sizes. Mm-hmm. In between, have you ever heard somebody say turkey dolphin?
Nope.
The in-between thing. I've heard that, like, there's chicken dolphin, well, now there's chicken dolphin, and then the next thing you know, we're talking about big ones, bull dolphin.
Right.
Somebody said, you call that a turkey dolphin, the one in between. Did y'all have that, like, were they a pound and a half? Were they a pound, or were they five?
Yeah, most of them pound and a half, you know. And, but we did catch
because that turkey dolphin's like five, you know.
Well, we did catch a couple that were between 5 and, I'd say, 8, 10 pounds.
See, that's turkey dolphin.
Yeah.
Turkey dolphin. Not chicken, not bull. Turkey dolphin.
Well, we caught a couple of those, but most of what we caught was pound and a half.
What was the, you know, I ran through some grass, and it was so easy to see everything, because, I mean, you could, it was a beautiful day.
It was a beautiful day on Sunday.
Scattered grass, a couple little, not like a big rip of it, some mats, a few mats we saw, but, you know, by saw that closer in, you know, going out to 40, I didn't see anything, but it must have been beyond 40.
We were in 700-800 foot of water. On the tide line.
Okay.
So actually, we was out by the Seven Louisiana, which is southeast of the Salt Dome.
Okay.
And that was 1,200 foot of water, I think, somewhere around there. I mean, it's, you know, it's bill fishing water.
Right.
Beautiful water. Now, when we before we got to that tide line, which was only a mile or two from the from that oil rig, it was nasty water. The water was not pretty. I don't know where you were if the water was pretty.
It was. I never had, and that didn't, I had good green. I never got navy. I mean, obviously, I didn't go far enough for cobalt.
Well, it got kind of really nasty water.
It wasn't nasty. It was just green. It wasn't, you know, wasn't great. Wasn't, you know, wasn't horrible.
Which doesn't affect the bottom fishing whatsoever at all, you know. But as far as if you're going to try to fish for king mackerel or something, it might make a difference. But the water out around that rig was crystal blue. I mean, it was indigo blue.
Yeah, but I wasn't that far out. Yeah. I wasn't even, you know, wasn't even in the navy blue before you get there. But,
yeah.
All right. You had a great, congratulations.
Yeah.
I should have just gone with you.
Yeah, should have. You had your choice.
Yeah, but there it was. Having Dr. Sean Powers on, too, this tale of two cities here, and this is why I think it's important to have you on this morning talking about this. Mike has the, now Mike went further out, went some, you know, I fish, I'm 40 miles an in kind of guy. There's plenty of fish. You tell me from, I'm telling you as an angler, you're an angler and a scientist. Number of red snapper in the population right now?
It's held constant for several years, but it we saw a gigantic increase over the last 10 years in just pure number of snapper.
Right.
And so we think there's, you know, several strong year classes coming in, and that's what we want to see is all of these young fish. Obviously, we want the fishermen to be able to get a mix and catch some keeper size and then some more on the trophy size, but you know, I'm never upset when people tell me there's a bunch of small fish there.
Give me this from the angler perspective. Those 14s that we were, you know, one after another, 14-inch fish, I know everything's site-specific, but how long before that fish is 16?
Oh, they'll be 16 next year. They'll probably 16 to 18, depending on their site quality.
Okay.
You know, some might be able to explode up to 20 inches, but most of them will be 16.
But they're not going to make it before the closest snapper this year. They're not going to make
16. No, a 16-inch fish on average is about 3.5 years old. So
okay.
Some are 3, some are 4.
Okay, so the legal size snapper generally is 3 to 4 years old.
Yeah, and that changes what the average catch is, but that's 16 inches. And then we monitor along with the state, you know, what the average age of a fish is that we're catching. So back in when the seasons were very, very short, it was more like 5 to 6 years old. Now it's more around 4 years old. So
okay.
So that's a smaller fish on average. But it's not surprising to hear the story of, you know, that's why I tell everybody that if we want just to go out there, run out there and catch gigantic snapper, then we can go back to 3 to 9 day seasons.
No, thank you.
So
nope.
you Yeah, interestingly enough, you know what the season in the South Atlantic is, where the federal government still maintains control?
No. What is it?
July 12th, I think.
Till when?
July 12th.
July 12th, 12 o'clock season. That's pitiful.
A day.
One day.
Wow.
So, put some things in context.
That just made me.
No, Commissioner Blankenship and I were talking about that, and I didn't realize that until the commissioner had told me, because somebody had asked him how state management was going and more state control. And he said, here's where the feds are still controlling the season.
A day.
So, which means most of their fish are lost to bycatch and discard, because they got to account for all those dead discards during.
Yeah,
during
fishing
the other
anything
seasons.
Else on the bottom. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's pitiful. You know, I used to would throw the small ones back and try to high grade and try to, catch the bigger snapper. I don't do that anymore. I pretty much, if he's 16, 17 inches long, I'll throw him in the box now. And once I get to a limit, that's it. I just throw them all back. I definitely
do the same thing.
So, I've just got to the point where, and really, I don't like cleaning the big fish. I like getting my picture taken with it.
Yes.
But that's about it. Other than that, cleaning the fish or eating the fish, the 16, 18, 22-inch snapper is by far way better to eat. Yeah. So I've just quit high grade.
And don't get me wrong. The average size we know is decreasing. We're living with a lower average size for more days. But it requires more fishermen.
Okay, I want to talk about that, too, because, this is – something you're not just guessing. You're looking with the ROVs. You're looking underwater what that mix is. We're coming right back with Dr. Sean Powers right here on Midday Mobile. Welcome back, FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward. Good to have our friend Dr. Sean Powers, University of South Alabama, Marine Sciences. Senior Marine Scientist at Dolphin Island Sea Lab. And the Emperor of the Alabama Deep Sea Fishing Rodeo Judging Department. Emperor, does that seem fair? Does that...
I think we'd judge.
Like Caesar had his thumb up or down, and Caesar put his thumb down. Gosh, we're not that far off from rodeo time either.
Exciting.
Yeah, it's coming up.
Had the kickoff banquet last week.
So it's coming, and we got rodeos going on now throughout the year. And we also, reminder to go check the Fishing Chaos app, and get signed up for the Joy Life on the Gulf Coast, the St. Jude tournament. Give you $10,000 for the biggest snapper, $10,000 for the average snapper size, which is all the snapper get weighed in that tournament. They're going to find the average,
right?
And if you've got the closest to the average, like some old game show, then you win on that. So many other tournaments going on. You got CCA Star going on as well. Just give shout out to those folks. So many things I want to talk about here. We get back to what we talked about during the news break about the kind of structure and what kind of fish are on those, but I want to come back to the tale of two trips. Now, Mike will always beat me, but it is a rare time I go out and I don't come back with limited snapper.
But listen, the only reason is I do guff fish more than you do.
Way more.
And let me tell you, Kirk Tillman's going to beat me and you because he goes every day.
Right.
I mean, he knows the spots and got the places. He knows where to go today, where to go tomorrow. So it's the more you go, the more spots you have, the better you're going to do.
But that's just
the bottom line.
Right, and we weren't fishing the same places, but I'm using this as a learning thing, too, because what I did knowingly, didn't take my time to get live bait or even have big butterfly baits, the things I know. Because all I wanted to do is just go...
catch four snapper and come home.
Yeah. So I do that and have Dr. Powers here. Y'all go on these trips, these sampling trips. You've got the ROV. You got the underwater camera down there watching. And you're telling me about the mix of fish. And it does make sense. That doesn't mean those spots I went to didn't have 16-plus inch fish. But you're saying that just the number of undersized fish on them, if I have a piece of squid on a hook, just law of averages, I'm catching smaller fish.
Yeah, I would be surprised if those sites didn't have large legal fish on them, just because when we drop the underwater cameras, we see that cloud of small fish too.
Right, and I do that. I've been doing this long enough. When it gets tough, I always, get everybody to come up, we don't go to the bottom. We come up halfway and we get out off, up and out. You always catch bigger fish up and out from a wreck. But there must be so many little ones that they even followed them up and out.
Yeah, and they get a little more, they're apparently a little more aggressive and not so smart, I guess, about what type of baits they're looking for. So, we definitely still see large ones. And we'll see different species. One of the things that's always amazed me is how many gray snapper, mangrove snapper, or I just learned locally it's black snapper.
Yeah.
We see. And essentially, they are just not as aggressive for the baits. They're not going to fight all the red snapper for them.
I tell you, this is non-scientific. Here's anecdotal to put into the machine. When we had the 9-mile limit, we had the just state water season and really worked over those close-in places. A lot of bridge rubble places I have, they're like an adjacent to bridge rubble kind of piece. By the end of the season, we were catching, good numbers of mangrove snapper. In the beginning of the season, we're fishing those same spots and not. And it was, by my unscientific estimation, that the number of red snapper that had been taken off, because everybody was fishing 9 miles and in, that came down so far that it gave the mangroves a chance. And we, by the end of the season, we're just catching, we would catch a mangrove to a red, or maybe some days two mangroves to a red snapper.
That's unusual. I just wonder if we just worked them down a chance. Although we do have some evidence when you pull those large red snapper off that the smaller fish, gray snapper, smaller snapper, red snapper can colonize. A lot of it is just, they just have a greater chance of catching your bait. But I would encourage, and I'm sure you did this, that if anglers are on a spot where they continuously are catching small fish, they either change their fishing technique and change their bait or move on, because there's no reason to discard all of those fish.
Right.
There's 12,000 artificial reefs out there. I know a lot of people are relying more and more on their electronics. The electronics are better and better at identifying the size of targets. So if you're on a spot and all you're catching is small ones, try something different.
Well, and human
try
nature helps that too, because
move.
Yeah, and human nature I think helps that, because we'd be on a spot for a little while, and I was sick of unhooking and venting fish.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, okay, I'm tired of this. This is, time to move on. But, we always do, think, okay, just this next drop, if I can get on the number just perfectly, and I see, it's I guess just a numbers game.
Well, you have to use a bait big enough that the little fish
That's exactly right. And this is what I'm saying. Usually, that's exactly what I do, but I think today is a good example because I didn't on Sunday. Yeah. And so we're looking at the...
Never do that again, John.
Yeah.
and you will catch some large ones on the small baits and small hooks. The longest survey we have, I inherited from Dr. Bob Shipp, and we haven't wanted to change anything to keep everything. But, we fish with 8-odd hooks with pieces of squid, 11-odd with, pieces
pogies.
Of menhaden pogies. Yeah. So, there's a lot better ways to fish and target, but, we want to keep the data series consistent now. But, when we do fish for other species like amberjack in the study, we're using live baits. In fact, we were just out yesterday finishing off a study, and we were catching large snapper.
Off the live bait.
Yes.
Yeah.
Occasionally off the pogie. Yeah. And every once in a while off the menhaden, but consistently off the live bait. Nothing was sublegal off the live bait.
In your study, do you do any butterflying fish or anything baits?
No.
Okay.
No. I'm fortunate in that I get to work with some of the best charter captains in the world, both offshore, the theories for a long time, and now still with Skipper, inshore with Richard and Bobby, Richard Rutland, Bobby Abascado.
Never heard of them.
Never heard of them. So I'm fortunate. But we haven't, except for when we go really deep sea, when we do some of the grouper studies and things like that, they'll butterfly then. But and I'm sure they might do that on regular charters, but
I'm
not
sure.
On ours.
Yeah.
Okay, this is something came up during the news break that you and Mike were talking about. And you talked about that amberjack thing, and you talked about the different kind of wrecks that you were seeing different kind of fish on. More, not that there's not some of each, but you broke down the difference. You're talking about chicken coops, pyramids, and like a low relief wreck, like a barge or something. What are you seeing? Is, I mean, I don't know if this is published or this anecdotal or.
Mike and I were just talking. I was happy to hear that he caught so many vermilion snapper, because a lot of times vermilions are very hit and miss. I mean, your listeners may not realize they occur largely in big schools, and they're moving from structure to structure. They'll stay on a structure for a long time, but they want.
They're not as much of a homebody as a red snapper?
No, okay. No, not at all. They want kind of a large expanse of almost low relief bottom.
That's why live bottom was always good for.
Live bottom is good for. Bridge rubble is really good. The big barges that they I don't think they've sank a barge in a long time, but the big barges. So they like those, but then they'll also occur with the amberjack. Amberjack wants some high vertical relief. So think about some of the ships with towers left. The new reef pyramids, the 25-foot super pyramids that the state have.
They like
put
to
out.
Circle around stuff, don't they?
Yes, and they are a lot more resident than we realize. I mean, they will migrate eventually off, but you know, some of our tagging 30, 90 days isn't unusual for a big you know, amberjack. Red snapper will stay there for years.
Okay.
Until something happens to move them, a storm or something like that. Beeliners, though, they kind of move because they're in that big school. They need some big bait balls.
And yeah, they gotta have the food. Yeah,
that's why they're moving around. So what we're talking about also is it's amazing how experienced Gulf fishermen can both between the structures they choose, because they have more knowledge than I just told you, I promise you that, the baits they use, the hook sizes, how they're doing. I mean, they can really hone in not only on the species, but kind of the size range that they want. And it's truly impressive. I mean, to see, you know, that much traditional, we would call that traditional ecological knowledge or traditional mm-hmm. fisherman knowledge. But, you know, so there's lots of things experienced fishermen can do to get away from catching so many of those small snapper. Because the other thing that is abundant out there are dolphins. And in fact, on our surveys, we have
and
permits.
He didn't mean the chicken or turkey or bull. He means flipper.
We have permits, and our protocol is to keep the first so many a fish. And I swear those little dolphins pop up their heads and are like, you're supposed to throw that fish
yeah.
back. What do you
they
do?
They know.
Yeah. They've been counting the numbers.
We're going to call Scott Bannon.
There's
that's
six people
a short.
On the boat. They've caught over 12 now.
Yeah, I'm hungry. Those are supposed to go back in the water. I mean, so anything people can do to kind of minimize the number of those. In the shallow waters, those red snapper will survive really well. I mean, shallow being 60 to 120 feet, particularly if you vent them and there's no dolphins around or not that many dolphins around. But as you get deeper and deeper, you want to start, you know, limiting how many of those small red snapper you get, because you don't want them to die after you
right.
release them.
Well, absolutely. You know, big baits, big fish. We've talked about that in the past. You know,
right.
it's always true.
But bypasses the small ones. That's the main thing.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Coming right back, more of FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward. Our guest, Dr. Sean Powers, University of South Alabama, Marine Sciences. Senior Marine Sciences, Dolphin Island Sea Lab, and the emperor of the judging at the Alabama Deep Sea Fishing Rodeo. The emperor. We'll keep it that way. All right. We talk about snapper. We talk about beeliners some. You mentioned, though, that you're catching those legal snapper when y'all were trying to do your sampling for amberjack.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk some amberjack here for a second. Amberjack population trending which way? Stable? What do you think?
You know, it's one that we don't have a good hold of. That's the one, the last big study we have from Senator Shelby was a just like the great red snapper count, essentially the great greater amberjack count. And we're working on that now. It looks like in the western Gulf of Mexico, it is very, very healthy. Tons of big fish. For us, you know, anecdotally, it looks like it's a lot better to me. We've always seen lots of amberjack in this area. I can't speak for Florida. I'm mainly speaking for Alabama right now. But they were all just sublegal.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're seeing, you know, a good mix of legal fish and some large fish. I mean, you know, fair number of 30 to 40 pound amberjack, which my Louisiana colleagues always make fun of me because they're pulling 80, 120 pound amberjack off some of those reefs. And I think that's because they get less fishing pressure. But as we've talked about, I also don't want anything to do with 120-pound amberjack.
Those are one-a-days. So yeah. Any amberjack over really 30 pounds is a one-a-day. You catch one, and you and I have been together with Skipper on a trip, and catch one, and they say, all right, everybody. I'm like, nope, I'm done. I did my one.
Bring those young graduate students out for a lot of these surveys. So I do think it's improving. We'll find out. We're covering the South Atlantic and the Gulf of Mexico, and hopefully we'll have that report out and back to Congress in December, March time period.
I'm sorry, Mike.
No, I was going to say one thing I think that may have hurt the amberjack around here is from all the rigs being gone. They like you talking about, they like that tower. They like that high structure, which is an oil rig. I mean, that's perfect for an amberjack. And I think that might have hurt the population around here of amberjack. I don't know. What do you think?
No, I agree. I mean, if we don't have those tall, high relief structures, I know some states are really struggling to figure out what we're going to do as more and more of those platforms get decommissioned. I know that's why Colonel Bannon has spent some funds from the state on those tall, high relief super pyramids. They seem to work very well. But it's a concern. It's a concern all over the Gulf. What happens? And that's another reason is, you know, Florida's never had big oil and gas platforms.
Right.
So it's probably not surprising they don't get these 80 and 120-pound monster. And
that's right.
Amberjack. So, no, it's going to be a challenge. I'm hoping that they will reef more of those structures in place and we'll be able to spend a fair amount more replacing with super pyramids and large ships. Not for the snappers. Snappers seem to like just about any structure out there. But
although it's definitely chicken coops produce better than pyramids.
So yes, chicken coops. I don't know about produce.
They don't last as long.
Chicken coops have, on average,
catch more fish.
Many more snapper.
Okay. Yeah, I guess produce. I'm saying produce for the angler.
The state wants to stay away from their investment on those because they don't last. Some of them will last as little as 4 years, kind of 7-8 years, whereas a concrete pyramid will be 25, 30 years.
Yeah. So. No, it's the tortoise and the hare. You end up with probably the same number, but you don't have to, you know, you don't have to replace it.
So why do you contribute that there's more on a chicken coop over a pyramid? Why would that be?
I think it's just more complex habitat. If you look at one of those chicken coops underwater, it's got all that wire surface for a little growth of barnacles and small crustaceans to hang out in, and it's got, you know, a lot more protection for the fish once they swim
the
in
small
there.
Fish. Yeah.
The small fish, yeah. And also the normal size ones. But you know, so I think that's the reason. I mean, but it rusts away fairly quickly in that salt water.
I want to come back on that amberjack thing. So, because you're talking about age of snapper, you said that legal snapper generally with 4 years old, 3 to 4 years old, right?
Yep.
Or 16. So amberjack 36. What is amberjack? How old?
I think it's 36. I can't remember if it's fork or total though.
Yeah.
But how old is that fish? How old is that fish?
Is between
fork length. Yeah, it's a fork. It's a fork. It's 34. It's 34 fork length.
Okay. It's between 5 and 7 years old.
So it takes it longer to get to that.
Yeah. The other thing about amberjack is red snappers start reproducing. I mean, now they don't produce that many eggs at size, but they can reproduce when they hit 3 years old, many of them. You know, that 36-inch, 34 to 36-inch for amberjack is really when only about 50% of the population is mature. So you would have to go up to 38, 39 to make sure 100% of that population is sexually matured and been able to reproduce. So, you know, each of these species has different life histories, different strategies for, you know, reproduction. So
bigger fish make more eggs. So, I mean, the world of speckled trout fishing.
Oh, yeah,
that always
absolutely
makes sense because, you know.
They not only make more eggs, they make exponentially more eggs.
Right, that's why that big speckled trout is so valuable. You know, we always talk about it, that she's going to be, she's worth more than, you know, a limit or two of the smaller fish.
No, and redfish are a prime example. Red drum is a prime example of that. We actually harvest more, recreational fishermen harvest more redfish now than in the peak of the commercial fishery. The peak was 12 million. Gulf-wide, we harvest about 14 million now. The reason we don't have a problem is because we have the slot.
Yeah.
So if you bank and protect that spawners and above the slot, then you're protecting that egg bank, and you can harvest more juveniles. So I was really happy to see that we're getting more closer and closer. You know, well, we have a slot now for speckled trout.
Sure.
Most states have that. I mean, I wish a slot would work offshore. That would be the answer to our dreams. But unfortunately, there's so much discard mortality, either from the barotrauma, from bringing them up from depth, or the sharks or the dolphins, that a slot just doesn't work.
You know, you grew up in Louisiana. I grew up here. But I say this, and Mike knows it. I tell folks who redfish with me now, this is the golden age for me. The red fishing now is better than it was when I was a kid. I'm talking about delta fishing places. I mean, it's anecdotal. It's not scientific. But I can just tell you, the consistency of redfish from the east end of Dolphin Island to up to the Dolly Parton Bridge is just more consistent than it was when I grew up in the 80s.
Oh, I would agree for Alabama. Everything we've seen, I mean, Alabama has really turned into a recreational fisheries hotspot, and my Louisiana brethren will kill me when I say that, but I think we're getting much more to a sportsman's paradise. Louisiana has some issues that they have to deal with, and they are finally dealing with realistic limits on speckled trout, realistic limits on redfish. They're losing all of that marsh. The productivity is decreasing, and the effort is just so high. So I don't know the heyday of Louisiana, I think.
Well, I'm not
was
saying
a while
I'm,
ago.
For
us, we are living in the best of times.
Yeah, for red fishing for sure.
And speckled trout.
Yeah.
I think speckled trout fishing is really good now compared to what it used to be.
No, I have my father's longtime friends. These guys are all 76 to 80 years old, went to Louisiana consistently every year. They're from all over the country. They now come to Dolphin Island.
I want to kind of push past as we're talking offshore, came inshore, back offshore too. I don't know if there's any research going on, but as you're looking at snapper and all that, shallow water groupers, how are we doing around here? Do you see any trends there? You see many, you know, and I'm not talking about snowies and, you know, yellow edge. I'm not talking about deep drop stuff. I'm talking about, you know, closer in. And scamp, part of that too, obviously, as a grouper.
Scamp is from what we can see, in fairly good shape. You know, it's getting a lot more pressure than it used to, so so that's one that we're going to follow. But the other ones, you know,
like a blank
gag,
or a gag
is in particular, gag is in trouble. I mean, why is that? Largely because of these large red tide events off Florida. It has very little, I think, to do with the fishermen.
We're not getting restocked.
Yeah, most of the juvenile recruits are coming from the Florida area. Florida has the largest, obviously, gag and red grouper fishery, and we're seeing problems with both of those. And I don't think it's the fishermen. They haven't even approached their quotas recently. It's that the red tide events, particularly, you know, off that midsection of Florida, almost all the way to Sanibel, are killing a lot of the juveniles. And now
those would be the ones that would end up in our neighborhood.
Correct. Correct. So we have some gag in the small gag needs seagrass beds or mangroves, and we don't have a lot of that around here. We have some seagrass beds, but shallow water groupers is the area that we're really concerned about in the Gulf of Mexico now. I think Florida seasons are severely restricted now, and I think they're looking at further restrictions on the commercial fishermen.
So, I mean, as somebody here that likes to catch grouper, I need to really worry about what's going on with red tides in Florida.
Absolutely. Or, you know, go to scamp. I think scamp is – scamp usually stay kind of offshore, even the juveniles. I think scamp is healthy, but we're going to be watching it because of all the effort shifting over to scamp.
Yeah, I'm just going to try to get some of Mike's spots, and then I'll shift my effort over there. Coming right back, more of FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Welcome back, FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward, Dr. Sean Powers, our guest. But throw one thing in here on just regulation stuff. That's not what Dr. Powers does, but I'm going to throw this in. It came up on Alabama Marine Resources on their Facebook page, and well-timed. I think it was Wednesday morning. My phone started going ding, 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 Jubilee, Jubilee, Jubilee. You know, all my Eastern Shore people flexing on the Jubilee. The Alabama Marine Resources put this out. Reminder, too. So, in a Jubilee, you still have to have a fishing license.
Yes,
okay,
you
so, do. It says, in order to take, catch, kill, or possess fish or other seafood, you must have an Alabama saltwater fishing license, unless you're under 16 or 65 or older, and a saltwater angler registry. And then, at the Jubilee, you must adhere to the size and creel limits for regulated species. So, all bets are not off when it's a Jubilee. So, that means flounder at 14-inch tail length, 5 per person. Redfish, 16 to 26-inch slot, 3 per person, 1 over the slot allowed. I don't know if I've ever seen a bull red in a Jubilee, but maybe there's some. Yeah. Maybe. Trout, 15 to 22-inch slot, 6 per person. And also on crabs, they got to have a 5-inch carapace, point-to-point length, and no more than 5 gallons per person on crabs. And shrimp, no more than 5 gallons per person with the head on. So those rules still, even if it's a Jubilee, and you're like, they're all there, they're just all there. The laws are still the laws.
Did it say how many tickets they wrote?
It did not.
Because I guarantee you they did.
It did. I did not see a ticket count for it, but it's out there. So just a quick reminder, because people get like all excited about Jubilee and forget, you know, that it's still part of the harvest that goes into to the fish.
And the rules, I mean, for some, they don't seem to make sense, but a lot of those fish will survive. I mean, they're just stunned. My favorite word, science word, they're moribund.
Ah, moribund. I can use
which
that around.
Which means, you know, kind of almost dead, but not quite dead.
Well, yeah, you watch it. The sun gets up and things get right. Those fish start, they're less stunned and less stunned and less stunned. Then they start coming back, you know, to speed.
Well, I know Scott was telling me sometimes all it takes is one of those big ships to come by.
Yeah, just a wake.
And send a big wake because it's going to throw up some oxygen water into it. So,
So that's what, I mean, it is lack of oxygen is what's causing the Jubilee. And some of them do die, I guess. I've never been in a Jubilee.
Some do. By the way, too, just to
say some of them do die.
Promote other shows. Like Dr. Powers comes on Midday Mobile. But also, if you want to go check out in our podcast page, we put it up. We put it back up. Interview I did with Dr. John Dindo. We did an hour on the science behind Jubilees, you can check that out as well.
Yeah, particularly the shrimp and crabs, they're going to have the hardest time.
Because they're not as mobile, right? I mean, they can't get back.
I mean, they just have really low tolerance to low dissolved oxygen. I mean, think about how quick the shrimp die in your live well when that bubbler stops. I mean, the croaker will be able to stay there for quite some time.
Listen, the croakers are different. The croaker could do good on land. Croakers are,
there's probably no bullminnows up there on Jubilee either because they can survive in a mud hole.
Yeah, they can. I mean, they could survive in your yard. There's some science that there's no funding for why croakers live so much and spots die so quickly. You know, you get spots and you have them in the live well. You have croakers and spots in there. Those spots, the second they go in the live well, they're already starting to die.
Yep.
And you think, well, they're both kind of similar size bait fish, but They do something differently.
But I wouldn't be surprised about the crab. The crab, I would think, you can throw them out on the deck of a boat for hours, and they're still alive.
So here's a secret, too, that yes, you can, and you can put shrimp in sawdust. That's what they do in Texas. They will
say what?
They give you a bag of sawdust. My father-in-law showed me this. They give you a bag of sawdust and cuttings, and it's got live shrimp in it, and they stay alive. It's the same thing with oysters. The worst thing you can do, if they're in water, they're going to try to get oxygen out of that water, and they're going to die.
But take them out, they close up.
Put them in the air, they're going to shut down.
But how does the shrimp, do they just carry enough water? How's that crab that Mike's talking about in that shrimp?
Well, the crab has a lot of moisture in it, so everything stays moist. And it can be out of water. They can go in the intertidal mm-hmm. or the nearshore areas above the tide and roam and find things to eat. Shrimp, I mean, the purpose of the sawdust, I think, is just to retain that moisture in the shrimp. But if they're in water... Same thing with oysters. If they're in water, they're going to try to get every ounce of oxygen out of there, and they're going to keep trying even if there's no oxygen in there. So the best way to transport oysters, transport crabs, when you see them at a seafood dealer, they're out of water because they would kill themselves if they were in water.
So, okay. Wait a second. We'll run out of time. But so the crab says, put it scientifically, oh, crap, I'm out of water reserve.
Yep.
Versus if he's in water, he keeps trying to get oxygen out of the water that's now had the oxygen mm-hmm. pulled out of it.
Yep.
So being out, they go, all right, shut down mode, hold on to this. Okay.
Yeah.
Sawdust.
Sawdust. I didn't believe it until my father-in-law showed it to me, and he was absolutely right. Now, I don't know how effective it is. I mean,
how long it lasts.
I don't want all these live shrimp dealers going to sawdust and then calling me back saying it didn't last very long. Here's a class action lawsuit.
I mean, that saves me money on replacing aerator pumps and stuff on my boat. I just filled that
hatch up. I was thinking exactly the same thing. You put it in your live well, all that sawdust, and then you got a real issue.
Yeah.
I mean, everything clogs up. All your vents clog up.
No, I'm just thinking, I just do sawdust bin in my live well. No more pumps or anything. Just pack them in there and pack them in sawdust. Couple of things. We've got like a minute and a half left here. I thought about this last year. You and I talked about last year, maybe the year before, during the rodeo, the number of people that were weighing in permit, right, that came mm-hmm. in that they thought they had pompano. Is that anything we're looking at? Is that trend still continuing? Is there any kind of – it's just a rodeo is where you see that, you know, where the science of that comes from?
Yeah, it's where we see most of the catch. I mean of them, and every year so far, there's been three or four people disappointed that it's a permit, because permit get appreciably larger mm-hmm. than
pompano. Like a magnum pompano.
Yeah, so I mean, you know, you want, just because it's got yellow fins doesn't mean it's not a permit. What you want to look at is a pompano is really torpedo shaped up front, whereas a permit has a much more blunt head. There's other ways to tell the difference.
I'm just wanting a population permit so we can get.
The most common thing we see misidentified is people coming in with juvenile kings that think they're like monster Spanish.
Yeah. We'll get you back for another ID lesson here before the rodeo. Dr. Powers, thanks for being here.
Oh, you're welcome.
Thank you. Again all next week for FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. For Mike Ward, I'm Sean Sullivan. Bye, y'all.